Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate, and even out to Phoenix, Arizona. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Hunt Mortgage is the home of the pre-purchase commitment, the only product of its kind in the marketplace today, where you can actually go through the process with absolutely no commitment of cash or any other obligation. And at that point in time, you'll complete the process and you'll be ready to enter the market effectively to purchase your next home with cash. It's very important in today's market because there is a shortage of inventory, and when you find the house you want to make sure that you'll be able to pay for it and compete, frankly, for that particular property. And oftentimes you'll be competing with people that have cash, and that's an important thing to be able to compensate for. And you can do it very simply with a mortgage commitment. All you need is the property, and that's only available through Hunt Mortgage, 633-3700. And speak with one of our mortgage consultants today about how that can work for you. Hunt Real Estate is also the proud sponsor of the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, and even Rochester Americans, and we're happy to support them as they win another game last night, which is kind of exciting. I don't know when we've had two in a row of anything in a long time with the Bills, but it was great to see. It was actually an excellent game. We have a very special show for you today. In the studio with me today is an old friend and someone that I think is a good friend to our community, Sam Savarino, who is the owner and chief executive officer of Savarino Companies. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, Peter.
It's good to have you here.
Good to see you and good to be here.
Tell me, Sam, we've known each other a long time. Give us a little background on how you got into the development business.
Well, I got into the development business through the side door because I'm a contractor, and that still is my primary role in this community. But it's an easy way to get in when you're developing any projects. The largest risk is the construction risk. We ended up being a partner in some projects just because it was convenient to do so. And eventually we evolved to doing some of the work for our own portfolio and being the major partner in other projects locally and in other parts of the country as well.
So you have periodically appeared in the press and with your new projects. What's the latest? And give us a little history of the projects you've actually been involved in directly as Savarino Companies.
I think we've got some noteworthy projects. 500 Seneca, which is a mixed-use facility, almost 400,000 square feet on Seneca and Hamburg Street in Buffalo. It's 97 apartments, 160,000 square feet of Class A offices. There's everything from canine daycare, wine cellars, a distillery, hair salon, therapy spa, any number of tenants in that building too. So it's a true mixed-use facility. Also was important because it was partly financed using federal and state historic tax credits, as well as brownfield tax credits. So probably emblematic of using those programs, and in Buffalo, rescuing a building that had no use and being a pioneering project in a community that could use some investment and has grown since.
What is the core of the attractiveness of that whole corridor? I know, obviously, Howard Zemsky and his group started the project, I guess the thrust that way through Larkinville, the development of that. I think that's about 10 or 12 years old. But that was a pioneering project. And what's the attractiveness? That's about a mile from downtown, the core of downtown.
Yeah, why would you want to be there? Makes it attractive?
Class A office space, but I've still got to drive someplace.
Well, I first I have to say that the true pioneer down there was Howard Zemsky, and well before a lot of the programs were in place and a lot of the incentives, or there was any other investment in that area. Howard made a significant investment in the former Larkin buildings and turning them into office space. Some of the desire to be down there is that you are a pioneer, and that the building that you're in was worth the work to save, and it's got interest and it's got its own story. And I would say since that time, you know, the neighborhood has grown up around it, and people who have been down there for a couple of years have an investment in things, the good things that are happening in the neighborhood. I can, right around 500 Seneca, for instance, you know, we now have a small brewery and beer garden that opened up next door across the street. There's a couple hundred more apartment units. There's another brewery that opened up there. Dibutsu Restaurant is opened up on the corner. And the latest project, there's an underpass on Swan Street that directly links the hydraulics district where 500 Seneca is with the Larkin District. You can see it underneath the underpass. It's a little bit forbidding and not easy to go there, but working with the city, we've secured some grant funding to improve that. So now it'll be a very pedestrian and bike-friendly as well as car-friendly connection right between the two. So it's linking the neighborhoods together. And little by little, they're all being stitched together. The improvements on Seneca Street have made it a green street all the way to downtown. So you find more and more people walking it and more people taking their bikes, and the connection doesn't seem so daunting. So you may not have to drive there to get there, but if you do, it's a little easier.
You know, I have been involved in, I guess, like you and others in this community, the study of how all this has evolved and really how urban areas redevelop, because I think it's very important, obviously, for our community to have a strong core. A lot of the theory behind that is that, you know, it has to begin at the middle and kind of work its way up. And what we've developed here in Buffalo is this kind of a series of hubs. You've got kind of a residential hub, the Long Elmwood Avenue and Hurdle Avenue, and fanning out from there. And that's, I think, been quite successful in terms of redevelopment. And then you've got the downtown Central Business District itself, which is kind of going through its own redevelopment in stages and phases, anchored by a very large building that is still pretty much empty. And then you've got around City Hall itself, you've got another anchor that's pretty much empty, the old Statler building. And then you've got development moving out in the direction that you've just described. One of the things that I studied a long time ago and you allude to in your last comments is the relationship between the residential component and the business commercial retail component as well, that one really can't survive without the other. And you see this in how the suburbs have evolved and then, in effect, contracted. And through the, I guess, the slow death of suburban malls, that kind of thing, and we had... One of your fellow developers, Nick Sinatra, on a couple weeks ago, talked about a little bit, not much, about the Boulevard Mall and what was going to be happening there. But this is, what do you see as the right ratio, and what do you see as kind of the healthy interaction of residential and commercial? How many residential units do you think will be needed in that whole Larkinville, Seneca Street area that will provide its own kind of energy that will keep it a walkable, as you allude to, a walkable community?
Right now there's plans in Larkinville itself, I think, for another at least a couple hundred units of housing to go in there. There's been other projects in the area. We did a small project at the former St. Clair Church School for a dozen units just on the other side of the thruway. Mm-hmm. And I would say in the future you'll probably see a couple of the other industrial buildings around that area repurposed and used for apartments. So I know actually there's one on Exchange Street in view of 500 Seneca that there's more apartments proposed. Right now, with those projects that are on the boards or in place, you've got probably over 2,000 units of apartments right in that immediate area. That's a pretty significant amount. And there's there's a good number of single-family homes in that district as well that, I hate to use the word gentrification, but it has been gentrified. The neighborhood has got some significant investment from private owners buying the houses and making an investment in them too. So there's different levels of investment in the neighborhood. Of course, the jobs are down there too. There's several thousand jobs in those office buildings down there too. Enough entertainment down there. The Zemskys have done a very good job of doing programmed entertainment in the Larkin District several evenings during the week. So there's enough there right now. If you spend some time there, it's a functioning community. There are people that spend a good portion of their day there. They get what they need. There aren't things like supermarkets and things like that nearby, but I've spent my time living in the suburbs too. And just because something is a little closer as the crow flies doesn't mean that it's easier to get to. So I live in the city myself, and I find the living a little more convenient, and the travel a little easier too.
If you look at the whole community and our population, you'll see that in the last couple of years we've had actually a tiny bit of growth in Erie County. But basically, when we have growth in one area, we tend to lose it in another area. If we have jobs growing in one part of town, they come from another part of town. As you have seen through the commercial brokerage business and commercial real estate business more generally, there's some organic growth. We're seeing it through M&T, obviously, in their tech area growing by some thousand jobs in our city, but you don't see a lot of kind of organic growth. We're not a kind of community that's growing by leaps and bounds. So when a community like yours in that whole section that you just described evolves as it does, people come from someplace. Mm-hmm. Do you find that is it healthy competition in your mind for the next office user or the next apartment user, are we just moving people from one place to another and using things like tax breaks to make something happen that effectively takes from a market rate situation someplace else? I know it's a complex question, but think about it a little bit. I
certainly witness it, and there's been a lot of discussion on things like that. Where our radio show here is coming from Amherst, we're amidst a number of office buildings that have benefited from, inducements and tax breaks from the Amherst Industrial Development Agency. Mm-hmm. In some cases, those incentives and those tax breaks, are wear off after time, and then mm-hmm. rents go up, and it puts these buildings at a competitive disadvantage.
Absolutely.
Especially when they need additional investment in them for the second tier of tenants, and just because they're older, and then you're competing with newer facilities, whether they be in the city or whether they be somewhere else in the suburbs, that have those incentives, and a tenant is going to go where they're best taken care of, and when they're out there looking for it, they'll go to where they have an incentive to do it. You got to be careful about just moving people around. Mm-hmm. I will say, at least in the case of the ECIDA, there are several criteria and tests that have to be met now, so they're trying to not be incentivizing people to do that, either to build a building, to lure those type of tenants in, or to allow those type of tenants to take advantage, just one after another, moving to the building with that it is paying less taxes and has less occupancy costs. But we're getting smarter about it. I don't know if we're there entirely. But as far as whether we're moving people around, there are a lot of service businesses in town. Secondary, our business and construction development, we're really a service business. We're not necessarily a job creator, bringing people in from the outside. We're providing services to firms that do. And in Buffalo, if you go to other communities, there's a robust growth in the information sector and mm-hmm. information technology, and that's benefiting cities more than other places. So there's two things happening. There's a shift of workers to urban areas where you have the infrastructure, the educational institutions, and other things that those jobs require. But there's also growth in that job sector. In Buffalo, some of what we mistake for growth is actually, you know, we stopped the bleeding. We've lost all the manufacturing jobs really there are to lose. And we're gaining in technology jobs, and a lot of those jobs are coming in the city. But we are not adding, at least the statistics indicate that we're not adding the technology jobs at the same rate that other communities are. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned what's going on with M&T. I think, you know, for some of us, at least it's been purported, that that's pretty emblematic of a type of growth that we should be having here. And the hope is that that investment in jobs locally will let people know that, you know, there are those, this is a good place to recruit people to and recruit people from for those kind of jobs. And then maybe we'll start experiencing the exponential growth that some of the other urban areas across the U.S. are.
Sam, we have a caller on the line. This is Gary from Boston. Gary, how can we help you?
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. I'm wondering, Mr. Severino, your company or any company you know of has any plans to do development on Broadway, linking up the Polonia, Broadway Fillmore to downtown? I mean, it's such a nice wide street, and, you know, I think that would be the next place to go.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that, Sam?
Well, out my office window at 500 Seneca, that's the view I get. It's it's a couple blocks over. I would say if you drove down there right now, there's a rather large project going on at the old Buffalo Ford site. Mm-hmm. They are an apartment complex. It's affordable units, not subsidized, but affordable apartment units on a formerly vacant site over there. I think that's a good node. And actually, I was at a press conference just this week. That Congressman Higgins held in front of Public School 57, which is at Broadway and Sears Street. They used that project. It's a mixed-use project anchored by apartments in a former Buffalo Public School. But the importance of the project was the fact that things like historic tax credits could be used not only in grand and glorious public buildings in downtown Buffalo, but in neighborhood buildings that were iconic and an anchor in the neighborhood, and redevelop them. Mm-hmm. And when those buildings can be redeveloped, they provide an anchor for smaller scale development like single family homes and other things in that area. So if you had to figure out a way to reactivate those streets, there is some urban architecture left over there, especially on some of the corners, some commercial buildings, and mm-hmm. they are historic, and they do have a good fabric, and they did tie the neighborhood together. And if some of those programs that we have out there, brownfield tax credits and historic tax credits, can be used to repurpose those buildings, that's probably the best first step to getting other single-family home development in the neighborhoods.
You know, this I'm just trying to see if I can put this in bite-sized pieces for our listeners. And it seems to me there's kind of two pieces of this whole world that you're in and we're all in, really. And that is, first of all, just getting projects done. First of all, identifying them, making sure that the pieces are all fall together, which include the tax credits, as you've pointed out, both brownfield and historic. And one of your friends from the development community, Rocco Termini, went through a very detailed description from his perspective as former accountant on how tax credits work. And it was very, very interesting. And I encourage our listeners to go to our website, huntrealestate.com, and listen to that show, just so you can understand what Mr. Severino is talking about and what others have talked about on the show. But so you've got to get the projects done. You've got to identify them and get them done. And then the next piece is their sustainability. And this really, that happens, I guess, or that becomes, I guess, real when you have, I guess, all a tide raising all boats, which involves people and jobs. And this is what, I know from your perspective, or I believe from your perspective, you see a project, you identify it, you figure out a way to get it done, and you get it done. And that's what has to happen. But on the backside of that, I know you're involved in the community. How do we position our community? What do we need to do here, Sam, that reposition us? You touched, for example, on the M&T Bank, the job situation there, but that's just one company. Yeah. And if you take, and Mr. Wilmers used to say this from time to time, that if you take all the job growth in Erie County and you compare it to just the job growth at M&T Bank, over the same period of time, the numbers would be just about equal.
Mm-hmm.
So we're losing in the rest of the community. We're gaining in one place, all told. Now we've got the medical campus, and we've got obviously the tech corridor that's evolving and the tech hub, I guess it's going to be called, in the main Seneca building. We've got kernels of interesting things happening. We've got the whole Canal Side project, which is an entertainment section center. But what do you think we need to do? What more do we need to do in this community to really, only got a minute to answer me, but what do we need to do in this community fundamentally to get that tide rising so that all these boats float and these projects are sustainable over a long period of time?
Well, I mean, it's just, you know, the simple answer is you need more jobs in here. And that's why I said the M&T Bank, their investment is emblematic, or hopefully it's a precursor to other types of technology jobs that are available, are out there, are needed in a global economy, and that could be serviced out of Buffalo. Buffalo, and being in New York State, may not be on top of everybody's list to invest in ownership in a business. But most of the people that are here, HSBC Bank, M&T, and others, will probably tell you quite quickly that it's a very good place to have employees, especially in a back office operation. People are happy here. You're able to enjoy a good living, and that we have a relatively educated and talented workforce. Somebody told me one time that in the Carolinas, when they trained an employee, their average length of stay in the job was 9 months. In Buffalo, it's 9 years. And training of employees ends up being one of the number one costs of businesses.
We're going to come back and talk about that and a lot more with Sam Savarino, and we'll be right back with more from Our House to Yours after these important messages.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. Go there today. Check out our series of algorithms that we have there that will allow you to really cross-reference the value of your home, not just against one algorithm like a very popular website out there, nationwide website, but three algorithms, actually, which will give you the opportunity to really understand values in your neighborhood or any neighborhood you'd like to know about anywhere, not just here in Buffalo, Niagara. HuntRealEstate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA here in this neighborhood and also all across upstate and even out to Phoenix, Arizona. This show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Hunt Mortgage is the home of the pre-purchase commitment and the low rate and closing cost guarantee, and those combine to provide you with the very best structure for you to enter the housing market today, whether even if you're interested in refinancing. And I would strongly encourage you to consider that today. Interest rates are coming down, which is an amazing thing, and if you follow the bond market, that will tell the story. Linda Malaya has been on the show many times, and she will tell you, if you talk to her, that this is a most advantageous time to enter the real estate world, even if you just want to refinance your existing home. So call today, 633-3700. I'm in the studio today with Sam Savarino, who is the owner and chief executive officer of Savarino Companies, and we've been talking with Mr. Savarino about one of his most recent projects, and we're going to talk about a few more in the next segment, but also about a broader picture of Western New York in terms of what has to happen to make projects like the ones Mr. Savarino is doing and other guests that we've had on this show, what makes them sustainable. Because as we were talking about just before the break, Sam, you know, you've got the core issue, which is people and jobs. I mean, that really supports just about everything in every community. And we all compete for people and jobs with other communities, and mm-hmm. and one of the things that, you know, is a knock on all of New York State is that we don't compete very well, that we tend to make it very difficult to do business here. Do you sense that? I mean, you deal with a lot of, I guess, commercial tenants. Do they lament to you at all, or are the tenants that you're working with, are they just plowing through things and because of all the reasons that you said earlier in terms of the lifestyle and quality of life that we have here, that they're just choosing to be here in spite of what it might be received as business handicaps?
Well, maybe my experience isn't the same as everybody else's, but a lot of the tenants in our buildings that I've been able to interact with are in the people business. You know, it's important for them to find, train, and retain employees to do the jobs. That's their biggest investment. That's qualitatively what makes the difference for them. And generally, they enjoy being in Buffalo. They enjoy the commitment that the employees have to the area. They feel that they have a good amount of qualified candidates that they can choose from. And the other things, either directly or indirectly, to impact employee performance, whether it's the time of travel to get to work, you know, the ability or accessibility of other things to live your life, make Buffalo a better place to recruit people from and to. If you're losing an hour and a half or 2 hours of your day in your commute, that's not a good thing. If you have you have to travel 2 hours to try to find a two-bedroom single-family home that you can afford to live in, that's not good either. And even though some areas of the U.S. might have more cachet, probably a little bit better weather, they don't have those advantages. And to that I would add, Buffalo also has a pedigree. Buffalo was big when it was good to be big, and we have an infrastructure here of things from a Philharmonic Orchestra, even the sports teams, not that they're always the be-all, end-all of success in a community. But all of those things, Buffalo has a lot of the quality of life things that come from being in a big city, and that they're all accessible. You know, you live in some metropolitan areas with traffic and everything else, you're not able to take advantage of the things the community has to offer.
Mm-hmm. And I think for all those reasons, we've talked about this many times on this show, the elements of the quality of life and what makes it a really contributing factor to this being a great community. As you mentioned, just travel time. I mean, I was asked one time, a long time ago, how much time do I allocate to get anywhere to one of our offices? And I say 20 minutes.
Yeah.
For any office, 20 minutes. Sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less, but 20 minutes gets you just about any place.
That's right.
Which is pretty nice thing to be able to say. Housing quality and the cost of housing is obviously something that we're acutely aware of in our business, but it never ceases to amaze me. I was once, a friend of mine was commenting from the podium on our business, and he was saying, just think if I had been in one of the other communities, but how different. I went up there and said, what the hell? You know, I chose to be here. So I mean, if I chose to be in Chicago or San Francisco, yeah, per transaction, there would have been more money there, but it also been more competition, different competition, different quality of life, and nothing I wanted. So what I wanted was here. Mm-hmm. But it was a very interesting kind of comment. But that goes to the other end of the spectrum, and we're going to take a call in a second here. But the other end of the spectrum are the people that have made it here, they've done very, very well here, mm-hmm. and then find themselves being advised by their accountants and others to, you know, keep your home here, but make your official residence someplace else where there's a lot less taxes. And doesn't that kind of have a little drain at the bottom of this beautiful funnel that we've been describing here? That unfortunately, when one of those people leaves, it takes a lot of people coming into the top of the funnel to replace them. How do you feel about that?
Well, it's generally related to the personal income tax in New York State, and a lot of people just moving to go to Florida to do it. Mm-hmm. Taxes in New York State, you know, are onerous. There is a personal income tax, where there isn't in Florida. You know, that bears a little bit of examination, because sometimes the taxes that you get aren't as direct as an income tax. Mm-hmm. But that being said, New York, the taxes are quite robust, but there also is an expectation of the quality from everything, from the public schools to the university system and everything else that's mm-hmm. supported by the taxes. But if we are in the business of educating people, supporting people, providing a safety net for everybody, and then when they're able to, they go over and they don't pay their fair share because it's better for them to go to a state that's less taxed, yes, that's drained right off the top.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could tell you I had an idea on how to stop that or remedy that, but that's just the way it is.
Simple idea would be to balance the cost of loss when someone leaves like that, the real cost, versus the revenue that now has to be spread across the rest of the population just to meet the bills that you just described, schools, infrastructure, et cetera. We do have a caller on the line. This is Sonia from North Tonawanda. Sonia, how can we help you?
Good morning, Peter.
Good morning.
You know, I recall several years ago, Mr. Savarino, your name came up as a potential buyer for the former Lowry High School on Payne Avenue. Can you refresh? I don't remember whatever happened to that, or if it just was at a standstill. A potential buyer did not take over the property.
What do you think about that? Was that a project you looked at, Sam?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I, along with the original owner, I'm a part owner of that building right now, and we are going through the process to pursuing getting the historic tax credits and other things that we need to renovate that school into 85 senior housing units.
Wow. You know, it's an interesting comment from Sonia, just by virtue of where she's from. There are pockets around our community, some of which have been beautifully maintained and redeveloped, like East Aurora, let's say, and others that haven't had quite the same benefit, like North Tonawanda or the city of Tonawanda, for example. How do you in the development community look at areas like that? Is there enough, of a capital push to justify projects in those areas?
Certainly. They're communities too, and they have needs. And if you're talking about senior housing in that community, it's primarily for people that are aging out of their homes over there. They people will live independently, but need some form of assistance. And a lot of times it's good for them. They have an asset that they have in their house. The rent on the senior living units are pegged at based upon the income, not upon your assets. So that the house gets put back to beneficial use for somebody else that can use it, wants to have children that go in the school district. Seniors can age in place at a more appropriate facility. And especially in the case of what our project is going to be there, there will be services for frail elderly. So as elderly people might need a little help with daily living, it'll be available to them so they can still live independently in a good lifestyle without being institutionalized.
You isolate, in my mind, one of the most important things in the whole real estate world right now, and that is to get people in one way, shape, or form into housing that's appropriate for them at that whatever point in life they happen to be. And it also has enormous bearing on the school systems. It has enormous bearing on the stress on the infrastructure. For example, there are sections of our community that have exactly the same number of houses they did 40 years ago. But the number of students that are attending schools, public schools there, might be half, because the families that raised kids that sent them to that school are still there.
Yeah.
And it might be one person or a husband and wife, but they're still in the same house. And so a young family doesn't have the opportunity to move into that school district. And often the argument that we hear is something that I'm sure you've heard and maybe been able to answer through the projects you're doing. Where will I go? Tell me where I'd go. I'm not ready to go into some kind of assisted living environment, but I'd like to go someplace where I can live independently and just be a little freer.
Yeah, it's rather poetic then that we are renovating a former middle school into use as a senior housing facility. So, but that you're hitting it from both ends of it. But you're right. Most seniors want to live independently. They want to know that somebody is available to check on them. If their emergency develops, they have means of letting people know. And if they need help and for a short period of time or a long period of time with some of the chores of daily living, that somebody is there to help them. There's a program in place to do that. So they're happy to live independently. They just need a little bit of help. And now as time has developed and there's more seniors out there, there's more of a refinement and sophistication in the services offered to seniors, so they have more of a choice of living that way. It isn't just live independently, live with your son or daughter, or go to the nursing home. There's an awful lot of choice now for seniors.
There are, and seemingly the hottest item in the residential development world today is independent housing for seniors.
Yeah, we have, not for ourselves, but we have four projects going on right now for third-party senior housing developers. So that is a large part of our business.
It's huge, and I think it suits our community, and it's a very good thing for the entire nation, frankly, because we have a huge inventory problem across the whole country. And we'll be right back with more from Our House Tears after these important messages. Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, home of the pre-purchase commitment, the low rate and closing cost guarantee, also the Buy the Before and Live the After program, and the Warm Home Loan. And I encourage you to call them today, 633-3700. I'm sure we've got a program that will work for you. And if you'd like to participate in today's show, you can reach us here in the studio at 803-0930. And you can also text us at 30930. So call us or text us with your questions or comments for me or my guest, Sam Savarino, who is the owner and chief executive officer of Savarino Companies. And you've seen them around. I'm sure you've seen their projects around. They seem to be in the hottest parts of our community. One project I believe that seems to be a very successful project is one that you did along the Buffalo River. How's that whole project going?
Buffalo River Landing, I think you're referring to. And it's on Ohio Street, right where South Street meets Ohio Street. That was a brand new build on a contaminated site along the Buffalo River, so 80 residential units. It's a higher end facility. There's parking on the first level and four floors of apartments right along the river. There are docks there for the use of our tenants as well. The rents in that building go from $950 to the smallest unit on the second floor to approximately $3,000 a month for the corner unit on the top floor. So it's completely full. All of the tenants are very happy over there, and they were all pioneers too. We were first building that building. I don't think they had even completed improving Ohio Street. Been a few structures over there now. Resurgence Brewing is across the street. Some of the work down the road that Ellicott Development has been doing. But most of our people, out of the 80 units, I think we have 20 people who own a kayak going kayaking. So,
well, you know, we had an event at, there's a restaurant right there. What's it called? There's a
Duende you're talking about? Or
there's another spot there that has banquet kind of, you can have an event there.
Yeah, Tewksbury.
Tewksbury
Lodge.
And that we had an event there, a company event there, and it was really cool. But I was talking to some of the people there, and they're pointing at your building and saying, you know, why would somebody want to live there? And I said, look around. I said, where can you live on the water? You know, where can you live on the water? Anywhere in this country.
Yeah.
You know, years ago, there was someplace I read, and it said that we had 90 miles of undeveloped waterfront in this area generally described as the Niagara Frontier. There's no place else on the planet that's a developed community that had that much waterfront. And it seems to me only logical that would, as a pioneer, things will happen all around you. Since you did that, what else has happened?
Well, you know, the biggest change down there, I think, was our attitude about the Buffalo River and that whole area. There was Friends of the Buffalo River and others have made a concerted effort to get funds to clean up the river. There's been a significant amount of shoreline restoration over there and habitat restoration and dredging to get rid of the contaminants that have been on the bottom of the river. So it was less the local sewer than a functioning river that you could recreate on and go out for a boat ride or a kayak ride. I joke when you're on a Saturday in the summer when you're down there, it looks like the Normandy landing with all the kayaks out there and the occasional freighter and pleasure craft going down there. So you're surprised that anybody has any room to do anything down there.
It's more like Dunkirk with the odd collection of boats ferrying people away from that disaster. Anyway, it's great to see those kinds of projects because it's – I remember when I first got my first boat years ago, I was exploring with some friends and we decided to go down the Buffalo River. And we were marveling at these monstrous old grain elevators that, I mean, it was desolate. There was nothing happening there at all, zero. And we all said to ourselves, you know, just think if you could live here. That's what we said to each other. And now that's been made possible.
Yeah, you know, all those industrial relics over there, they're not going anywhere. Nobody's right. going to be tearing down a grain elevator. They're there for the next 1,000 years. And they're probably very difficult to repurpose for anything. Some
they're
of them
terrible.
Are still being used as grain elevators. But as background, as art, just in place, they anchor the neighborhood. Nothing wrong with leaving them there and having low-level recreation right around them. So if you look at in Montreal, that's just what's happened along the Lachine Canal. There's been a whole community developed over there, and they have still some functioning grade elevators and some functioning factories. Hmm. But a lot of the infrastructure is just left in place as public art.
Very, very interesting. And this whole historic preservation of those buildings has always been, you know, a little bit of a mystery to me. We have a text here, Sam. It says, my daughter will be a first-time home buyer within the next year. Where would we find grants, loans, programs that are specific for her in this area? She's looking to locate in the suburbs. Do you know of specific programs? I mean, we are always scouting these things, and I would encourage that person who's texting to call our mortgage company, 633-3700, Hunt Mortgage, to find out what programs are available that for first-time home buyers. We have several. But it's an opportunity, I think, that is really not – I don't think there's enough good things happening for first-time home buyers. Do you know much about that, or is that kind of beyond? I mean, you're at a different end of the business.
Yeah, we don't build single-family homes, but I observe things just like everybody else does. But we certainly have, I notice especially in the city of Buffalo, an awful lot of property that could be redeveloped that used to be single-family homes, and there still is some single-family home stock in Buffalo, a significant amount. With a little bit of investment, is salvageable and would be very good. It wouldn't take an awful lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the ability to do it. I'm not sure of any organized plan to encourage homesteading in a lot of these areas, but it's something that I think would require a large planning effort, and it's a very large planning effort. It isn't something that any private developer can take on. It's too balkanized, so maybe that's one reason it hasn't been done. But we certainly have the potential to do that.
And you point out directly and indirectly there that the infrastructure's already there.
Yes.
Unlike going out to the suburbs where you'd have to, in many cases, build a new road, put the infrastructure in, which is extremely expensive, go through the whole process of approvals, et cetera. This is already done.
Yeah, if you look at maybe the information is stale, but the population of the county has been relatively static over the last 75 years. But it wasn't that long ago that Buffalo had a population in excess of a 500,000 people. The county was a little less than a million total. Now the population within the city of Buffalo, the 42 square miles, is under 200,000, I think, at this point. So what happens? That's all infrastructure that has to be put in, roads, sewers, that has to be tended to, plowed, repaired, replaced. And the city, that infrastructure is still there. That has to be tended to as well.
And I think we're seeing a certain amount of repurposing along the lines that you've described earlier in terms of the Senex Street Corridor, Larkinville along Ohio Street, certainly. And then the more traditional neighborhoods where there's been more organic reinvestment, the Elmwood Village, Hurdle Avenue, et cetera, the west side, even the east side around the medical campus. I mean, it's an enormous amount of investment that's been kind of onesies and twosies.
Yeah, and I think one of the noteworthy aspects that hasn't been part of a large planning effort, it has been organic. People have done it. And I would also add to that the Five Points area on the west side, areas like 14th Street, 17th Street on the west side, neighborhoods that I used to live in, I'm familiar with. There was a housing stock still, even though the neighborhoods had seen, it deteriorated a bit. The housing stock remained in place, and now there are people buying these houses up, renovating them because they do have a bit of classic architecture about them, renovating them and making an investment in them. And little by little, those neighborhoods are coming back to the point where people are complaining a bit about the gentrification of the neighborhood, which I guess, that's an issue in and of itself, but it's a we aspired to complain about such things in Western New York 20 years ago.
We certainly did, and I kind of wish that term would go away because I'm not so sure it's very descriptive anymore. I think what it reflects is just what you said earlier, and I mentioned also the fact that it's organic redevelopment of areas that have inherent value because of their architecture, their location. I mean, if you think about it, let's say you work in the Central Business District. The west side is maybe a five-minute drive.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Yes.
You can ride your bike when the weather's nice. You might even walk. And, in other cities, to walk 10 blocks is nothing.
That's,
About 10 blocks for us is like, oh, my gosh, I need, got to buy a car just to get there. But, it's interesting to me that we have, that this is going on now. But I go back to the kind of the core issue in my mind, which is how we not just make ourselves feel good about what's going on here, but we make the rest of the world feel good so that we are attractive in many more ways. And we're seeing things happen. We've talked about it many times on this show. Things like the tremendous AK 360 project that will turn that whole part of our city into a world-class center, I think, which it already is, but it needs work, and we need to do some things. And when it's done, and the work that is going on constantly in the parks, I mean, these are gems, and this is something that will never go away.
Yeah, no, we have a great infrastructure in here. Matter of fact, I'm on the board of the Botanical Gardens, and we have a large capital project that we're going to do to, augment and repair what is in the Botanical Gardens. But that facility alone is.
Spectacular.
Spectacular, and a lot of people that live here don't appreciate it. Mm-hmm. I have occasion to run into a lot of the tenants and apartment tenants, and you ask them what they're going to do, and some of them say, well, I my mother came into town. I took her to Niagara Falls. Then I went out. I went skiing in Ellicottville, and I went to a hockey game, and then I went out. They're going to all these features. I haven't done that over the course of 20 years, what somebody else will do in a week. So people appreciate this area, what it has to offer.
It is amazing. They used to say that visiting teams that came into play here, whether it's junior hockey or whatever it might be, would come and go as fast as they could.
Yeah.
Now they're coming and staying, and they're bringing their families. They're making a whole trip of it. Sam Severino, we've got about a minute left. How would our listeners follow up with you? How could they learn more about what you're doing?
The easiest way would be to visit the website that we have is www.severinocompanies.com. And we also we're on Facebook as well. We try to keep people abreast of the things that we're working on and the things going on in the community that we think are noteworthy or are important too.
So besides the school in North Tonawanda, what's the next project for Severino?
We have a couple of things going on. We'll be doing some in the Richardson Olmsted campus, some artist loft housing. We've been designated as developer for that. As well as some projects in Olean and Batavia.
Excellent. Sam Severino, owner and chief executive officer of Severino Companies, thank you for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank all our listeners. We'll be back again next week at the same time. And remember, when it comes to real estate, all of upstate is Hunt Country.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.